Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Over their 160-year history, Republicans have swung from one pole to another. Sometimes they've been progressives, sometimes reactionaries. Today, once again, the party of Lincoln has positioned itself on the far right. How did the Republican Party, once dedicated to expanding the vision of freedom and opportunity among the poor, become the anti-government, anti-tax, anti-regulation party of today? Heather Cox Richardson addresses this in her new book, To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. The book is published by Basic Books, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Heather Cox Richardson to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You are a professor of history at Boston College and certainly considered one of the foremost experts on the role of the Republican Party in American history. At what point did you know you wanted to lay out this history?
Well, I actually started studying the Republicans back in 1987, and because you can't really understand America unless you understand the Republicans, who are in many ways the political arm of the Declaration of Independence. So I began back in 87, wrote a number of books, four books on the Republican Party first, and then I just really wanted to write the whole American story from the beginning to yesterday.
Just so I get a gauge of where we're headed here, how much of this history has been written since 1987? Meaning, how much of the Republican story is essential and is very emblematic of what the party is since that time?
The major turning point for the modern-day Republican Party, I argue, is really in the 1950s and the 1960s, and that what's happened since the 1980s is part of a continuation that began actually during the Eisenhower administration. So what's happening nowadays is the end of a trajectory that began 60 years ago, and we're about to do another full circle, I think. I think you can see it in the way people are talking about the party right now, that we're at the end of an era and about to start a new one.
Is that not the case with the Democratic Party as well? Is this not the case of our political parties, that they are living, breathing things that change and evolve?
Absolutely they are. But I would say very carefully that the Democratic Party is not the anti-Republican Party, if you will. They do work in tandem, obviously, but the imperatives of the Democratic Party are just a completely different kettle of fish than those in the Republican Party. So you can't really say that they are the positive and the negative or the black and the white to each other's dance. They are doing very different dances that bump up against each other in certain ways.
And is it safe to say then that the Republican Party and its history has been more cyclical and the Democratic Party's history has been more linear?
Well, remember, I'm a historian of the Republican Party. I can talk about the Democratic Party, but I am not primarily a scholar of the Democratic Party. So I don't want to make any great statements about the Democrats. I think the Republicans are very, very clearly cyclical, and you can see that in part because each generation resurrects certain of their predecessors. So you get Teddy Roosevelt talking about Lincoln, you get Eisenhower talking about Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt, and you get, for example, nowadays, you got during the George Bush administration and more recently, Republicans resurrecting Coolidge and Hoover as being great presidents. That's not something that you would have heard during Eisenhower's administration.
I do find it fascinating, and I don't mean to beat this to death, but I am interested in what you were saying about your thoughts on the Democratic Party. I would think, and I certainly understand that the history of the Republican Party is your beat, and that's what you have been studying. But doesn't a lot of that history come from the comparison to the Democratic Party?
Doesn't a lot of my history come from the comparison to the Democratic Party? Interestingly enough, I would say not a lot. In the 19th century, perhaps, yes, because, of course, the Civil War defines both parties so dramatically in new ways that they do bounce off each other. But in the 20th century, obviously, as I say, the parties are doing a dance, but the imperatives that are driving the Democratic Party in the 20th century are far less an emphasis on the principles in the Declaration of Independence the way the Republicans are, and far more a focus on international relations.
And talk a little bit about when we started to see that emergence of a focus on international relations.
Well, interestingly enough, it's the Republican Party that initially brings international relations into the American debate, and that's with imperialism in 1898. And that word, although it's loaded nowadays, is exactly what they called it, the idea that America needed to spread its system around the world because our system was the best. And it's that idea that America is the best needs to spread across, spread its ideals across the world that, in fact, inspires Teddy Roosevelt to turn around and try to clean up America. Now, of course, once America enters the international stage with the Spanish-American War and the Philippine War, then it basically all eyes turn outward, and you go from there to World War I, very quickly to World War II, and on, and we've basically been in some kind of a military action almost constantly since World War II. So that really turning point is about 1898, and it's with the Republican Party that makes that happen. One of the things, of course, that puts the Democrats on the defensive in international relations is that the Republican Party has staked their turf out early and extraordinarily effectively, which puts people like Woodrow Wilson back on their heels when they have to fight World War I, because the Democrats don't really have a policy at that point, and they have to develop one.
In this history, is there such a thing as a true Republican president?
Well, I have argued in To Make Men Free that the true Republican presidents, the ones who really represent the party and the ideological origins of the party and when the party was at its best, are Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, and Dwight Eisenhower. And they are, I mean, I got my reservations about Teddy, I got to be honest, but right. I think Lincoln and Eisenhower are two of our greatest Americans of all time.
I have started to read a lot about Eisenhower, and that's why I found your book so fascinating. I find him to be a fascinating political character and also quite enigmatic.
Well, that, of course, the political stance. So was Lincoln. He's enigmatic in public. He never says anything he doesn't want to say, and he's a master at deflecting questions. In fact, it's a wonderful clip of somebody trying to pin him down after JFK is assassinated about what the country should do. And he starts talking about Garfield, which is just a brilliant moment in political obfuscation. But while he was enigmatic in public, you know, I read all his diaries and his letters and his memoirs and everything I could get my hands on. He was an enormously principled and extraordinarily thoughtful man who was quite open in his diaries and his letters about how his mind worked. They're really wonderful reading.
So what has creeped into our vernacular in describing both parties of liberal and conservative, and since we are talking about the Republican Party, we will stick to the conservatism. And when that started to really become, if not a tenant of the party, at least part of the vocabulary.
The idea of liberals versus conservatives?
Yes.
Well, that's a really interesting set of words in America. But the idea that there is a conservative with a capital C in America and a liberal with a capital L comes straight out of William F. Buckley Jr.'s book, God and Man at Yale in 1951, in which he was trying to argue that the Eisenhower and the New Deal consensus, to which about 90% of Americans held, was a socialist plot, and that anybody who believed it was a godless liberal with a capital L that was supposed to reflect the same idea as the Communist Party in China with a capital C. So he had the capital L liberals, and then the capital C conservatives were people like himself and the very few people who wanted to go back to the world of the 1920s before there was any kind of business regulation. That idea that there are conservatives and that everybody else is a liberal, the media is liberal, the universities are liberal, great thinkers are liberal, and that's a bad thing. That comes straight out of Buckley, and he called himself a revolutionary. He was going to purge the world of liberals the same way that we had purged the world of Nazism. So that's where we get our modern-day discussion. But, of course, the idea of liberalism with a small L comes out of John Locke and the idea that the government should not be so big that it crushes individual aspirations. And the Republicans believe that and believe in small government in the late 19th century, and they use the word liberal in the late 19th century to reflect that. And then under Teddy Roosevelt, they switch it. They say that humans can't live, men, that's what they're concerned about, can't live up to their full potential unless the government becomes larger and becomes active. And it's at that point during the Roosevelt administration that liberal with a small L comes to represent an activist state as opposed to an inactive state. So you got yourself into a mess there by asking about those two words, but they're extraordinarily important in American political thought.
Going back to Buckley and that idea and concern over the New Deal, you make the point in the book that the modern-day Republican Party is still ultimately trying to undo the New Deal.
Oh, I'm so glad you got that. So many people have not picked that up, but in fact, that's exactly what I'm arguing. I think that's right. They did not like government regulation of business. They didn't like taxes because they didn't like that paid for government activism. But what they really didn't like, the Hooverites, the people coming out of that conservative wing of the party out of the New Deal, what they didn't want was business regulation. And that was Goldwater and Buckley and McCarthy and that whole and Reagan. That whole strand was very articulately trying to overturn the New Deal. The other wing of the Republican Party, the Deweys, the Eisenhowers, liked the New Deal. They just thought they could manage it a little bit better than the Democrats could.
How fractured is the party now?
The party? I actually think the party's at a fascinating place right now. I think it's in extraordinary disarray, which is always a time when you can have extraordinary growth. So I think it's terribly fractured. I think it is entirely likely that we're going to see some major changes in the party in the next not even 5 years, but I think by in 15 years, we will have an entirely new set of leaders with an entirely new set of principles. Very exciting, actually. If I were a young person, I might go into politics.
There is an irony, though, is there not, that we look at a party that most, yourself leading the charge as an historian and looking back at this, and many commentators who will look at the state of the party and say that it is fractured, that it is broken, and yet looking to regain the Senate, have the House, and be in tremendous power, even though it is so fractured and damaged.
Well, remember, there's only been two elections in American history where a party that's been in power for 6 years, after somebody's been in the White House for 6 years, where that party has actually gained seats. That was during the Clinton administration and in 1822. So if the Democrats actually held even, it would be extraordinary. It would be the third time in all of American history. So I'm not so concerned about that at all. What I think is really interesting in terms of reworking the party is not only the terrible drop-off in enthusiasm among the younger demographic for the Republican Party, but interestingly enough, if you are following the way that entrepreneurs and businessmen are concerned about things like the Ex-Im Bank, with the idea that, in fact, the Tea Party wing that has ridden to such power in the House, for example, is so anti- any kind of government that they're actually attacking policies that are quite useful to business is really interesting, because that sort of split in a party has only happened once before, and that was in 1868 when business switched from supporting the Democrats to supporting the Republicans. And once you get a switch like that, a seismic shift like that, there is almost no coming back from it within a generation.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that they eventually have to go off on their own, or they become incorporated in the current party? Are they then forced to go out and become their own party and separate themselves entirely, or do they become under the wing of part of the Republican Party?
Again, I'm a prophet of the past, but if I look forward and see this as a historian, not as a person who's looking at it and trying to deal with it on a day-to-day basis, but as a historian looking at it, I would say that the Tea Party is going to break off, going to become its own party, and going to become largely irrelevant. And the reason I say that is because the party itself, everyone talks about starting an effective third party. It really can't be done, I don't think, because the party's machinery is on each side is so powerful, you simply must have it in place in the 21st century to be an effective party. So I would think that the Tea Party is going to break off, become its own third party, which is actually far closer to its principles, perhaps some people shifting over into the Libertarians from there, and then the Republican Party will swing back toward the center.
Well, the name of the book is To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. The book is published by Basic Books. Heather Cox Richardson, I thank you very much for being with us and sharing this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Heather Cox Richardson is the author. It is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.